Don't say I told you so. I'm going to say it. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
It's good to be back with you here in the studio, Barry, on this kind of strange weather day.
Well, that's all right. It's kind of a nice day because, you know, the snow is melting, the sky is warming, even though it's gray and overcast and it's rainy. The point is, Chuck, we are moving into spring.
Yes.
And spring means two things, Charles. It's a time when young people's thoughts turn to love, and it's also the time when politicians' thoughts turn to running for re-election.
Yeah, that is sort of inevitable, isn't it?
It follows, like, night follows day. It really does. And you know what? This is going to be a very interesting year, Charles, because in even-numbered years, especially in electoral politics, those are usually what we call the big event tickets. Every 4 years on the even-numbered years, we have a presidential throwdown, usually primaries in one or both of the parties, the major parties. And then we have a lot of down-ticket races. Now, in Ohio, ours is structured a little differently because most of our big state offices are on the off cycle,
right,
which means that they fall the even years in between presidential elections, and that's this year, 2014. You know, we have all the statewide offices are running this year, governor, attorney general, auditor, treasurer, and secretary of state, along with all the members of the Ohio House of Representatives, because they're two-year terms. 99 members are up for election, whether they're running for the office they still held or the seat is open and other people are running for it. And then also, we have 33 Senate seats. So obviously, you can't just split it right down the middle. So what happens is, in the odd years, you have 17 people running. And in the even, for the even, well, excuse me, not the odd years, for the odd seats, there are 17 people running. For the even seats, there'd be 16 people running. This year is the odd year. It's linked into the gubernatorial election. It's on the presidential years that the even district numbers run for the election or re-election in the Ohio Senate. So we also have a couple of state Supreme Court seats that are coming up that are challenges for those who are sitting on the court already. And, of course, we're going to have a number of local and municipal races that are going to, you know, have impacts. I think county commissioners, township trustees, other people are on the ballot this year. But the point is, Charles, this is predictable. We know what's going to happen. We know that when 2014 rolls around, we know which seats are up for office. We pretty much know, by and large, who is and isn't running, because those things are really decided well before we get to the primary election day. And that is where we're going to go to today, is talking about things that are predetermined or presupposed, I suppose, is a way to look at it. Because one of the complaints that you hear most often from citizens, voters, is that, well, it doesn't matter. The decision's already made. My vote really doesn't count. Chuck, honestly, in one sense, I will say they're absolutely right. But in the other, in the greater sense, they couldn't be further from the truth. Their vote counts if it's an informed ballot.
Right.
If they go to the polls with an understanding, not just of what the candidate is saying, but the actions and events that are happening around the candidate.
Yeah.
And that is where it really, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes in order to figure this out. I know that, you know, down at COSI, they've got the big Sherlock Holmes exhibit right now. And, you know, some people who watch BBC America Masterpiece Theater are big into the Sherlock television series. And I'll have to admit, I'm one of those guys.
My daughter and my wife are big fans of the
I've always been a Holmes fan. I like the movies with Robert Downey Jr. I like the old ones with Basil Rathbone.
Oh, yeah.
I've got, like, the I've got like the DVDs of the compilations of all the Tale television series.
Or as my father used to call him, Razzle Bathroom.
Oh, I don't even want to go there. But anyhow, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes or even Dr. Watson to figure some of these things out. What you have to do is be willing to challenge misconceptions that you may already hold. And we talked about this. We're recording this on Thursday before today's event. And this morning we had a live interview on our local radio station with the program director, as we do monthly. And we talked about this idea. We talked about the idea that, especially for Christians, because that's mainly who our audience is, especially for Christians, we have been led into a number of, well, let's say, I won't call them myths, I'll call them carefully constructed misdirections about our political engagement.
Okay. One of the things that people can go to college to learn is marketing.
Oh, absolutely. And I would encourage people that even if you didn't go to college to learn marketing, go to your local library and pick up a couple of books on marketing.
Because what happens is you learn how to manipulate the way people think with marketing.
Right. It's basically marketing is a genteel and respectable way of saying propaganda.
Or flim-flammery or, pin-hooking. There's any number of good names for it.
But the point is, propaganda, the reason why people don't use it is because it has negative connotations, but it isn't necessarily negative.
No, not necessarily.
Propaganda is a tool that is used or misused in order to influence somebody to make a decision or take an action that the influencer wants them to take. Anybody turn on a radio? Oh, maybe they're listening to a radio right now. Why do you think people pay for advertising on radio? Why do you hear about the latest this or the latest that or concert tickets you can buy or soap and products that you can use in your home? Or, well, if you watch television, yeah. Why do we run beer ads and truck commercials during football
That's
games?
That's it. Well, there's you can see it if you... A really badly made Hollywood movie, if they know they've got a dog on their hands,
and
what do they
so
do?
And there's so many of those out there.
And what do? They cut the only funny parts or the only dramatic parts in the whole movie that make any sense, and they run them as the promos.
Mm-hmm.
So that you think all you're doing is getting a sample. You're getting basically the only good part in the whole movie, and they'll run them over and over and over and over again.
You can save your eight or more dollars that you'd go to watch the movie if you just watched the preview.
And if you learn how to think critically, you can look at the ads and say, that movie's a barker.
Well, and honestly, that's very easy. My wife is good at this because we'll watch trailers for movies, and as soon as the trailer's over, we'll stop the video. And she'll look at me and say, okay, what was the plot they were trying to get across? And I said, well, there wasn't one. She goes, that's right. That's the reason why we're not going to watch that movie.
But
if you can't, even in those little, sometimes they're 90-second, two-minute trailers, if you can't pick up on the basic idea of what the plot is and what, where the
character development is going to go
with that, either it's a movie that's designed to mess with your head, and some of those can be fantastic.
Yeah, some of them can be good.
Or it's the biggest dog out there, and honestly, it's because the director, producer, and the writers had no clue of what they were doing, where they were going to go to, and didn't care where they ended up.
Or they had their movie stolen from them by a studio.
There's that, too.
Yeah. But that being said, these techniques work. That's why they get used, and that's why the political parties fall all over themselves to get people who know how to do this.
Oh, absolutely. Some of the people who make probably some of the biggest money in politics are the ones who are what we call the spin doctors. The ones who know how to turn phrases and how to use words as weapons, how to use imagery, both positive and negative, to get you to have an emotional response. But you know what, Chuck? All of that takes one big element that is endemic to any campaign. Money.
You and I were thinking the same thing. Listen, these guys are not cheap, and they're not cheap because they're good.
Yes.
And they're not cheap because they can sell their services to anybody who's looking to get done what they can do.
Well, exactly. And the point is that if you have a politician or people who are wanting to push certain politicians who have money, they are going to go at, they're not going to go after, you know, your cousin Joe's next door neighbor who has a little blog site. They're going to go after the guys on Madison Avenue and out in California, the movie producers, you know, the folks who MTV, you know. I know that MTV was courted by all of the parties, and they tried to, you know, they tried to do this like neutral thing with the elections. As a matter of fact, I did know somebody who worked for MTV, the son of a good friend of yours and mine, who they moved to California because he was running the production for their elections coverage for MTV.
Interesting.
And it was interesting because it was all a show. And of course, and you know, and it was all, their propaganda was, it was rife in it. Okay.
Oh, well, look.
Which is the reason why he doesn't work for them anymore. Yeah,
they have an agenda. And that's the thing you need to understand. When that money comes in, the people aren't just saying, well, we want you to do the right thing and we'll pay you as much money as we can give you to do just the right thing, and we'll give you, we won't interfere too much in what you do. How often does that happen?
Let's say it happens about as often as yesterday follows tomorrow.
Dollars have expectations attached.
Oh, they very much do. And when the point is, the one who pays the piper calls the tune.
And we're actually going to give them an example of that particular thing because, sure, boy, howdy, it becomes obvious, you know, one thing that you need to do every once in a while is kind of go back and take stock.
Yes, absolutely.
In what you've maybe said in the past.
Okay.
And,
but before we get into that, yeah, because I don't want to jump right into that right now, because there's a couple other things, yep, that I think our listeners need to know. Because one of the major misconceptions we have around politics is money is dirty, and therefore money in a campaign is corrupt. That's not necessarily true.
No.
Money is a tool. It is a means to an end. It's what you do with the tool that makes it useful or hazardous. Just like a chainsaw. If I use a chainsaw to cut down a tree to make firewood, it's a useful help in getting the job done I need to get done.
This is why campaign finance reform is a red herring.
Yes. But if I use that chainsaw to cut your new car in half because I don't like you, then it becomes a weapon of destruction.
There you go.
That is detrimental to everybody.
That's the old story about the scorned husband who cuts the house in half and says, here's your half of the assets.
That's, yeah, right. Exactly. So before, because a problem is, Chuck, especially in our Christian culture, the vast majority of us have a knee-jerk reaction to money in politics,
yes,
and because we've been conditioned to think that money in politics is dirty, period. No, it's not. Money in politics is a means to an end. It's the question of whether or not you have a moral foundation and you have a clear vision for what you want to do, and that clear vision aligns with good ethics and moral practices as to whether or not that money is used well or it's used irresponsibly. The vast majority of campaigns use money irresponsibly because that's where you see all of the nasty attack ads and, you know, the slick glossies that come out there with the worst picture of your opponent you can possibly,
sure,
put up.
Or I've been on the wrong side, or shall I say the losing side, of many campaigns.
Sure.
And national campaigns. Mm-hmm. And you can tell the agenda of, for instance, the news magazine by the photos they choose to run on their cover.
Right.
I can remember one candidate that I was in support of years and years and years ago. And what they did was they caught him saying a word that required him to make what looked like a sneer on his face.
Yes.
Snapped a picture. Boom. And here he is making this with this sneer on his face on the front cover. Well, do you think
if you say the word Google, if they catch you when you do the first syllable,
yeah, goo,
it's going to look like you're an idiot.
Yeah.
If you freeze that moment in time on a, yeah, photo, it looks like you're sitting there going, mm-hmm, you know, waiting for the drool to run down your cheek.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why I said long ago, I can remember people asking me about certain things, and I said photojournalism is usually good photography coupled with bad journalism. Journalism is a dumb word anyway. It's reporting.
Yes, it's not journalism anymore, because journalism is telling a story from a perspective of either being a participant in it or being an observer of it, and just telling the story as it is.
Right.
Nowadays, we don't even have, I don't even think we have reporting, because now we twist the facts, we manufacture the data. Even if the meme isn't what we want in the media now, we create documents, i.e. Dan Rather,
well,
during the 2004 election cycle.
Fake but accurate.
Fake but accurate, that's right.
and how long did he spend basically defending the fact that this could have been done, when in fact it really could not have been done?
Yeah, well, you know, he was on the wrong side of technology on that one.
Yeah.
But you know, when we get right down to all of this, what we're really saying, now, again, in politics, in campaigns, there are only three essential elements. We just talked about one, money. Another one that we need to talk about is message.
Mm-hmm.
What are you saying and how are you saying it? Well, that's where propaganda comes in. Oh, marketing. Excuse me. That's your marketing aspect. And then the other one is manpower. Well, the whole key is your messaging or your marketing helps you to raise your money and recruit your manpower in order to have a successful campaign effort. So if someone's coming along with money, then what do you suppose is their first thing they're going to want to have final say or control over, Chuck? Where your volunteers go and what neighborhoods they go knocking on doors in? Or what they're going to be handing the people that says things about you, the candidate?
Mm-hmm.
It's the message.
It's the message, baby.
The message is the medium, you know, to paraphrase Marshall McLuhan, instead of the medium is the message. But that's the whole key is, we're talking about the idea of money being used to message with. Because really, that's as necessary to political campaigns as sunshine and rain are to the flowers in the spring. Without them, you're not going to have a very, very compelling or attractive message. Your flower bed's not going to look very good. And if your flower bed doesn't look very good, you don't win the Beautiful Communities Awards that they give out from the Florist Association, and you don't win your elections.
No.
You really don't. I mean, that's really what it gets down to. That's the reason why we have to be, as believers, ready to challenge the misconceptions that we've been handed for many years. Number one, that money is bad in and of itself. And that number two, that people are basically good. And honestly, that's a deep theological issue. But the point is that we have to understand is the temptation is there to follow the money. Because what does the Bible say is the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And that's really true. And we see that in politics, because how many quote unquote good guys do we see all of a sudden nuancing themselves or growing in office or coming to realizations well after the fact that are actually contrary to what they've always said they believed in? And if you are paying enough attention, you realize that these changes of heart, these flashes of new conscience, these stands for new principles, are often accompanied by either the desire to raise lots and lots and lots of money or the acceptance of lots and lots of campaign cash from certain quarters.
I had to put the spleen on someone at a meeting the other day on this subject. This person basically said that we're going to have a lot of influence in 2016 because of Ohio's position as a, you know, you can't win the
presidency
without the Ohio Electoral College votes. And I'm not convinced that that's true. I've heard that that's an old saw that goes around. You can't win without Ohio. He wants to form a super PAC of truly constitutional or really conservative individuals. And my question to him was, okay, how are you going to keep the rats out? You want to do it with all these moral people who are going to do this and this and this. How do you keep the rats out? Now, you know what he said to me? I don't know.
Well, and I said, I hadn't thought through that one.
Here's how you do it. First of all, when someone comes to you and says, I'm going to give you $25,000, but the donor wants to be on the board.
Yep.
Or I want to be on the board. And me and my donor want to be on the board. And we want to be on the executive committee. You have to be willing to look at that and say, I'm not taking your $25,000.
And how many people are really going to say that?
Almost none.
Almost
and
none.
That's how these guys co-opt these groups. We'll do this and this and this and this if you drop your opposition to this, or if you drop your position on such and such and so and so. Happens all the time. How many pro-life groups? Well, we know of at least one pro-life group that's been co-opted. One big name group that's been co-opted because we want to have a place at the table and we've got advisors on our board. Well, how'd they get the advisors on their board? They got the advisors on their board because those advisors were willing to write checks.
Yes. Yeah, it happens with a lot of different organizations. And don't just think it's that the Christian conservative organizations are exempt from this happening, because they're not.
Oh, they are far from it. In fact, we have watched it happen. We're not going to mention any names.
Nope.
But we have seen groups that have been co-opted by party politics because of money.
And because they have a desire to do something that is going to take major resources to do, and then the party operatives see that as an opportunity. We'll supply the money, but we only need to make sure that you do it this way or don't do it that way, or we get to vet it before it goes out, whatever it might be.
Uh-huh.
And it's hard. I mean, because we're not talking like $2,500. Add zeros. We're talking tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to certain groups. Sometimes it's millions of dollars to certain groups to do certain voter education efforts.
We've seen it in our opposition to an Article 5 convention.
Oh, sure.
And when we look at it and see the groups that are involved that are pro this, despite the fact that we can make all the arguments in the world against it and they can't refute them, they're still for it. Why? Because somebody wrote them a very big check and convince them early on. There's another element that goes with this.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, at this point, if they backed out, it's a black eye because they weren't as smart as they thought they were. They got suckered, and they got suckered by money. So what do? You're stuck. If you don't have a conscience that's in there whispering in your ear strongly enough to get you to back off and make you see you really want to defend your position, because after all, you don't want to be seen on the next go around as the guy who got suckered.
That's it. But Chuck, the reason why we're saying all of this is because, well, you just sent to me the day before we taped this an article from one of our favorite feeds, Politico.com.
Yeah, the big favorite.
Well, it is, because Politico is like the blind pig.
Yes.
They start rooting around, and all of a sudden they start finding truffles and acorns. And honestly, we pick up the truffles and acorns, and we kind of explain out to people why they're valuable. And that's really what Politico really has done this time. And it's part of something you had said earlier about, the crystal ball.
That's right.
But Politico is reporting on their website, and this came up on a couple of days ago on the 18th, in an article by Alexander Burns and Kenneth Vogel, which we will copy the link onto our website at principlepolicy.com that accompanies the audio feed of this program after we air it live on our first airing on the radio station. But it says, the headline, exclusive, mega donors plan GOP War Council. Well, you know what, Charles? This isn't one of those things I'm sitting back here with my jaw hitting the floor aghast.
No.
Like, oh my goodness, are you serious? This is one of those ones like, told you so.
Yeah, we warned you.
Because, I think maybe this is the time to, we're going to unpack this article a little bit, but then we're going to unpack the fact that you should be pleased with yourself for listening to this program and being a faithful listener, because if you've been with us for more than a year and a half, you knew this was coming. You were an insider. You had information that the rest of your friends and colleagues probably didn't have any clue about what was going on. So when we talk about this, it shouldn't surprise you either if you're faithful listeners to this program. It seems that we've got a group, Chuck, that's coming together that really want to have influence in United States Senate elections. And don't kid ourselves, they're not just stopping at the Senate. They're looking at the presidency. They're also looking down ticket at congressional races and at key state level races. Now, this group is not your, you know, John Boehner and the House leadership or the Senate leadership and Mitch McConnell directly. No, these are the people that guys like that and guys like Rob Portman, and he plays a very important factor in this later. Guys like Rob Portman go to and beg for money. These are millionaire and billionaire donors to the Republican Party. And a group of them, led by a familiar figure who we've talked about on this program before, yep, are pooling their resources together because their goal is to create a coalition of funding and PAC money in order to shape how the Republican Party deals with certain issues. Chuck, can you imagine what those issues might be? I mean, are they talking about how they deal with, water rights in northeastern Idaho? Is it on the flight of migratory waterfowl across Lake Pontchartrain in Louisiana? Is it on whether or not there are new CAFE standards on automakers in Detroit? No, it's none of those things.
No, baby.
It's none of those things. The three issues they want to shape the Republican Party on, at least the three major issues, are immigration reform, and yes, they're pro-amnesty, folks, homosexual rights, and they're pro-homosexual, and the state of Israel. Now, my guess is they're probably very pro-Israel because right now the occupant of the White House doesn't seem to be that way. And, well, you know, we have a little situation there with trying to engage the electorate over this particular issue of who we have allegiances with and keeping voters voting for certain parties. I'll leave that section right there.
Right.
Because that's an entire show in and of itself that we will talk about later.
We really have to unpack that.
We have to really unpack that one later. But this group is formed a group called the American Opportunity Alliance. Wow, doesn't that sound good, Chuck? Doesn't that sound so positive and encouraging and, yeah, rah-rah and, you know, salute the flag and parade. Let's have the big parades and the banners and the fire trucks and the marching bands and the girls with the flags and maybe the war heroes marching out with all their medals on. Sounds just like that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Boy, the studio audience is sitting here giving us the Robbie the Robot treatment. warning, Will Robinson. Warning, danger, danger.
That's right. But the point is, these big money Republican donors are pushing for these issues, so they formed a front group. This is where Marketing 101 comes in, Chuck. You can't come out and say, hi, I'm billionaire so-and-so, and I want the Republican Party to embrace homosexual marriage.
That's not the way this works.
No. You form a front group that sounds good so that you can sucker people into joining it and giving money to it called the American Opportunity Alliance. Oh, it sounds so great. It's pro-business. It's pro-America. It's conservative. No, it's not. Let's not kid ourselves. But that's what they want to, put it up for.
In the way we think in a postmodern sense,
yeah,
conservative means whatever the speaker wants it to mean.
Well, we've said that on an earlier program.
Yes.
Well, we've reported that on an earlier program because certain leaders have said those kind of things that they can define what certain terms like conservative or religious freedom mean. They have the right to do so because they're sitting in the power seats. That's postmodernism writ large. Now, what we're looking at here is, this group knows that American Opportunity Alliance is going to be their quote-unquote educational arm. That's where they send out the marketing propaganda to get people to buy in. They're not stupid, though. They've also formed a PAC, a federal PAC called Friends for an American Majority. Boy, that sounds so good,
gosh,
doesn't
friends.
It?
Friends. How friendly.
Friends for an American Majority. So, in other words, anybody who opposes them is somehow not American.
They're not also not friendly.
They're not friendly, and they're not American. Which means if you oppose homosexual rights and homosexual marriage, if you oppose open borders and amnesty for illegals who are in the country, and if for somehow you're not just blindly loyal to the state of Israel and everything that they do, including spying on the United States, you are somehow unfriendly and un-American. Okay. Very good propaganda here, Chuck.
You know? Oh, this is beautiful, and this is a perfect example of how this works.
Yep.
You create nothing but positive images. You anyone who wants to bring up negative stuff, negative Nelly. No, let's exclude him because we're talking about the positive. We're accentuating the positive and eliminating the negative.
Yep. So basically, what they're doing is they're going to micro-target big pots of money from their donors to hit in certain seats and certain races where they can, where their money can tip the scales and put the person who's their hand-picked favorite in a position of winning a race. So, in other words, guess who they're going to be gunning for, Chuck? Mainly in most of these seats. And remember what I told you they stood for. Folks, if you believe in limited government, liberty, and you're kind of a Tea Party folks, and you like people like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and other people, they're the ones who have the target on their back.
You bet they do. They've got a great big target on their back.
Right. Now it's interesting, Chuck, because they next weekend, you know, we're hearing this weekend, but next weekend, last weekend of February, we're going into March, there's going to be a big confab in Colorado. Hey, we're going out there. Maybe we can get an invite. I wonder if they'd let us in as observers.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're going to be home before the weekend.
Yes, that's true.
Well,
that's true.
Actually, fortunately, because I really don't want to go to this meeting.
Yeah, but my guess is they're in Vail or Aspen. They're not going to be over in a suburb of Denver where we are.
No.
Okay. But this event with these big money donors is also going to be attended by a couple of politicians that people ought to be familiar with their names. One is Senator Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, someone who the Tea Party supposedly supported when she ran and who has been anything but a Tea Party stalwart in her votes.
Let's call that being Scott Browned.
Yeah, they got Scott Browned on Kelly Ayotte. Yep. That's right. Okay, so she's there representing Senate Republicans. Who's representing the House Republicans? John Boehner.
John Boehner. There's a big shock, folks. And listen to last week's show if you don't get and go back into the archives. It's right there on the front page of the blog.
So John Boehner, you've already heard him starting to cave on amnesty. We know that he, even though he tries to stay away from talking about it, if he's going out there to court these billionaires, and in other words, he's basically saying as leader of the House Republican caucus, which he is as the Speaker of the House, I'll make them march in step as long as you give us the money. Which means that really John Boehner is all but selling out his conservative caucus in the House of Representatives because they will have targets painted on their backs. Interesting enough, you know, we know that here in Ohio, some of the Tea Party groups, the Ohio Liberty Council and others, went around and they got some key races that they have challengers in. The big problem is, unlike these billionaires, they don't have any money.
No.
And so many of these challenges are probably mainly just statements of displeasure with the incumbent rather than an actual attempt to change the face of things by putting new blood in there.
Well, not only that, they're scared enough about challengers, let's say with people like maybe John Kasich, who has now had two challengers withdraw.
Right.
And ask yourself why. Now, we don't have any direct evidence of anything. We have speculation about why. It's not pretty.
No.
And it has to do with manipulation and people doing...
It has to do with the fact that politics is a blood sport.
Yes.
And so if you're going to get in politics, prepare to get bloodied because it will happen.
Yeah.
You know, when I work with candidates, and I do a lot, and matter of fact, I'm working with a couple right now, I tell them up front, listen, you and your family need to understand everything's fair game, And even the most innocuous things can be twisted to make it look horrible. So get ready.
If you missed a car payment 12 years ago, believe me, it's going to be blown up way out of proportion.
Absolutely. Now, Chuck, the reason why, you know, I'm doing a little crowing here is because, hey, 16 months ago, I told you so. The leader of the American Opportunity Alliance and Friends for an American Majority, billionaire New York hedge fund manager Paul Singer, whose name should not be unfamiliar to our listeners, because 16 months ago, Chuck, I predicted this. All except the names, I predicted what was happening.
And let me tell you, folks, when I saw this article, the first thing I said was, we went over this in, I thought, July or August of 2012. It turned out to be late September 2012.
Yes.
Because it took me a while to find the archive. But I said, you know, it's always wise to go back and listen to what you said, 18 months, 2 years, maybe 3 years ago. Because very often you'll either find out you were a complete idiot or you were very prescient. Now, this does not mean that Barry and I sit around crystal ball gazing. Ooh, feeling me bony body. Oh, please bring the vision to me. That's not what's happening here. We understand how these things work. We understand human nature well enough to understand it's going to come up again. A lot of people thought these guys were going to fade into the woodwork and never come back and we'd never hear about them again. Well, here they are back. And we said then that what's going to happen is this is going to get worse and worse and worse, and the Tea Party people are going to find themselves on the outside looking in. Well, guess what? You're now on the outside looking in.
And we ought to play that clip because I want people to hear what we had to say without having to go dig, because it took us a while to dig to get in the archives.
It did.
But I want to save a couple of minutes at the end here, Chuck, because I need to explain something to people about why this is so problematic.
Yes. So we'll now go to the clip.
Now, okay, ladies and gentlemen, why we named this program today Peeling Back the Layers of the Onion is because we're going to do just that for you today, because as we started, and as I mentioned, I was throwing this out to Chuck as the idea that, okay, the campaign has found a theme that they want to run with, and they're trying to soften their positions in order to make themselves more palatable to the Ron Paul-type supporters, the independents out there. In other words, they're trying to get votes for this. But as we got to digging into this, something else came out that I believe was much more important and I think much more accurate as to the reason why a year later, Paul Ryan, who's now the vice presidential nominee on the ticket with Mitt Romney for the Republicans, is doing a 180 on his position on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He went from voting against repealing it to saying, oh, well, now that we've repealed it, we just need to leave it alone because people are vested in this. Well, the reason why we did some digging is because, as on the comments on that blog, on that website, on CNS News, a name kept popping up, and that name is Paul Singer. Now, I'm sure our audience probably isn't really fully vested in who Paul Singer is, because, unlike you, Chuck, not many of them have an extra couple of $100 million to store around in hedge funds to let Mr. Singer manage for them.
Oh, if only. The Institute for Principal Policy wouldn't be two guys sitting in a basement with a couple of used microphones recording on a junk Toshiba computer.
But if you have a couple $100 million you want to give to us, we'd be more than happy to take it. But anyhow, Paul Singer is the head of Elliott Management Corporation, which is one of the country's biggest hedge funds. This guy's a multi-billionaire from New York State, and he also happens to be a lot of other things, Chuck. The very first thing he happens to be is the biggest donor to the Romney campaign. Okay, the biggest single donor to Mitt Romney's campaign. He's given more to the Republican Party and its candidates so far, and this was the article from the Wall Street Journal, ladies and gentlemen, so we're moving on here to the Wall Street Journal. Their article of Monday, August the 27th by Gene Dugan and Brody Mullins that showed that he's given $2.3 million just this election cycle to the GOP, including $1 million to underwrite the Republican National Convention, and another $1 million, and I got this information from opensecrets.org, yes, that you can go find people where they donated to federal candidates, that he gave $1 million to Romney's super PAC, which is also known as Restore Our Future. That's Mitt Romney's super PAC. And back last year, a year ago, in October, he handed $1 million to Romney's super PAC. He was vested in Romney a long time ago. But according to this article from the Wall Street Journal, Paul Singer has a couple of other interesting points about him.
At least a couple.
At least a couple. The first one being he's also the single biggest donor to Congressman Paul Ryan.
Isn't that interesting? Suddenly we go from Mitt Romney to Paul Ryan. Now, gee, why do you suppose Paul Ryan got chosen as the
VP nominee?
As the VP nominee.
Because Mr. Singer was a major financial backer. And honestly, that was one reason that it happened, according to sources, that his support helped Paul Ryan emerge as the vice presidential nominee. But Singer had approached Paul Ryan early on to ask him to run for president, that he would back him financially. Now, this is interesting considering Paul Ryan's record on certain issues, specifically gay rights issues, because that's Paul Singer's other claim to fame. He's one of the biggest single funders to support homosexual marriage legislation at the federal and at state levels. He's given, since 2001, he's given over $11 million to campaigns and to organizations to press for legalizing gay marriage. Why? Because Mr. Singer's son is homosexual and got married to his partner in the only state that allowed gay marriage at the time, the state of Massachusetts.
And let's be clear about why Massachusetts was the only state. The fact is that it was the only state because Mitt Romney wrote an executive order requiring
the judges to uphold it and to
the clerks of court,
the clerks of courts to provide gay marriage ceremonies.
To issue the licenses.
Issue the licenses, that's right.
And the fact
is, as governor at the time, Mitt Romney was the single driving force in getting gay marriage legalized in the state of Massachusetts.
That's right. He didn't have to do it. There was a court order that came down from the Massachusetts Supreme Court that said that the law was unconstitutional. There's a problem with that, though, Barry, in that in Massachusetts, according to their constitution, the Supreme Court cannot change written law.
Oh, well, that's one of those paper barriers, Chuck.
That's right.
That's one of those paper barriers.
Well, that's right.
And, of course, since the judge has to be an umpire calling balls and strikes, as we said on an earlier program, that rule book, that constitution, they don't have to follow that. They have to feel for the nuances of the game and maybe call a wider strike zone or a narrower strike zone, depending on who they want to win.
Exactly.
And that's going back to another program. You can go to our archives to hear that. But the other link that Paul Singer has is not only is all of his money invested, not all of it, but a lot of his money invested in Mitt Romney and in Paul Ryan, another name came up in the Wall Street Journal article. Folks, this is how Chuck and I do our research. We start finding and tracking these little threads until we figure out what the tapestry looks like. And then we come and we describe it to you, sort of like the Bayeux tapestry. So another name popped up in the Wall Street Journal article, and it's a gentleman by the name of Dan Sr. Now, Dan Sr. works for Paul Singer at Elliott Management Corporation. He's married to, and this comes from the Daily Kos blog site, which is a horrible leftist liberal organ. One, you hear Rush Limbaugh screaming about the Daily Kos all the time. But basically, they did an interesting bio piece on Dan Sr., and that he's married to Campbell Brown, who's the former CNN anchorwoman. So we got all kinds of things going on here. But the big thing is that Singer's employee is a major political strategist to the Romney campaign. And as a matter of fact, is the senior strategist to a certain Paul Ryan.
That's right. He was Paul Ryan's chief advisor during...
Chief policy strategist, as Paul Ryan now has flipped his position on a significant plank in the homosexual rights movement's agenda.
Now, this brings up a question, and that question
is... a lot of questions.
Well, lots and lots and lots. But I'd say the most salient question right now is, how did Paul Ryan, who has a record as being in favor of traditional marriage, how all of a sudden does he become the darling of someone like this senior character and
Paul Singer?
Paul Singer.
Yes.
Because Singer...
It's hard because we got two Pauls. We got Paul Ryan and
Paul Ryan
Singer.
Paul Singer.
But they're not nearly that far apart, it seems like now.
Yeah. And my question is, this guy was willing to pump all this money into Ryan, and he was being advised by Senior. And how did Singer get the idea that maybe Paul Ryan might be amenable to a change in his position?
I would assume it would have had to have been with conversations with Dan Senior, who happens to be one of Singer's chief political advisors. He seems to be a neoconservative wunderkind who is deeply connected to another neoconservative who our listeners might have heard the name before, Bill Kristol. Bill Kristol is a pro-war, pro-libertarian viewpoint on many social issues, and he was known as a neoconservative, which means that he's not truly a conservative in the sense of the word that we would consider conservative, which would be both social and fiscal. He's a fiscal conservative when it suits him. And socially, well, I don't want to be bothered with all that stuff. Let people do what they want to do. But so here, looking at the map, you got Bill Kristol, who was instrumental in helping the Romney campaign choose the person who Romney wanted to run as VP. Kristol was on the inner circle team that was advising Romney on which of the people, including Ohio's Rob Portman, and you had Chris Christie, who was mentioned. You had Paul Ryan.
You had Marco Rubio.
You had Marco Rubio, who are all considered the finalists in this VP sweepstakes. Paul Ryan came out on top. Well, it would be interesting, since Dan Sr. is his chief policy advisor, and Sr. works for Paul Singer, and Paul Singer is Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan's biggest single campaign contributor, and who's now given over $2.3 million to the GOP, including underwriting their convention.
Well, it looks to me, okay, it looks to me like
the numbers are starting to add up, ladies and gentlemen.
Basically, it looks to me like Paul Ryan came over with a strong box full of money.
Oh, absolutely.
And promised, if, this is the key, if he would maybe change position slightly on his pro-life stance, which he already has.
Which he already has.
He now
is soft to the rape and incest exception.
And now, and before, let's put it right up front. Paul Ryan at one point was pro-personhood.
Yeah, for legalizing personhood.
You can't have personhood and rape and incest exceptions. Those are incompatible positions.
They are.
You're either, there are two positions that you can really have on abortion. You're either pro-life or pro-choice, and choice being a bad word, you're either pro-life or pro-abortion. There are no in-betweens. Don't let anybody fool you that somehow rape and incest exceptions are a compromised, nuanced position. There is no such thing as a nuanced position on abortion.
No, there's not.
You're either for it or you're against it.
That's right. Now, Chuck, one of the things that our listeners need to understand about this is that Mr. Singer is very, very forthright about his support for gay marriage.
Oh, absolutely.
And he's actively engaged his money in this fight. As we said, $11 million he's been given to pro-gay groups like the Human Rights Campaign and others. But he actually went a step further. He's now bankrolled a super PAC that's for Republicans. Now, this super PAC called American Unity PAC, he's given, and we looked it up on opensecrets.org, he's given over $1.1 million to in the last 4 months. Okay, so he's now created this new PAC, and its sole mission is, quote, and this comes from the New York Times article by Frank Bruni, which all these will be linked on our website. You can find all these articles and these links, that, quote, he's providing $1 million to start a new super PAC with several Republican compatriots. Well, one of them is Ken Melman, the former head of the Republican National Committee, who came out as openly homosexual.
Yep.
And worked in the George W. Bush administration as his, I believe, I don't know if he was the chief of staff or he was the communications director. I think he was communications director.
I think he was communications director.
So anyhow, they formed this PAC, and its sole mission is, I quote, to encourage Republican candidates to support same-sex marriage. You can't get any more forthright than that, Chuck.
No,
that's what
can't.
They're looking for. And now, how are they going to do this? Well, they're going to, in part by helping them to feel financially shielded from any blowback from well-funded groups that oppose it. Read, social conservative pro-family groups who would possibly think that Paul Ryan flipping on gay rights issues might be a reason enough not to support him or to try to run him out of office if he were still a congressman. This group's going to fund and throw money at them to keep them financially shielded from that kind of
response. Like Focus on the Family.
Family Research
Family
Council,
Research
the
Council.
National Organization for Marriage. I mean, I can go on and on.
Institute for Principled Policy.
Yeah, we're going to throw our millions into that. That's exactly right.
Well, but you and I both, we do throw our time, talent, and treasure, as minuscule as it is available. We do that.
Well,
so,
that's true. We try to help out as much as we can. But basically, from this article by Bruni in the New York Times, he said that our conversation, that's his conversation with Paul Singer, reflected a growing awareness among prominent Republicans that embracing marriage equality, that's their word for gay marriage, could broaden the party's base and soften the party's image in crucial ways. Yes, Chuck, that's right. It would be crucial because I think at that point you would probably lose. Well, maybe I'm overstating this fact. Maybe you wouldn't lose many of the social conservative groups if you just told them the right things, because this information's out here, ladies and gentlemen. It took us maybe 2 man-hours total, tops, of doing research by Googling up some names and following a couple of threads to try to figure this out, and we got it pretty well buttoned down. There isn't any reason that some of our friends in these national groups who've got researchers on staff and they're paying for them couldn't have come up with this to vet these candidates ahead of time. I'm sorry, I'm just very concerned about that.
Well,
but I want to go back to this because one of the things they said, as Singer said in this article, he says, and I quote, "There's a feeling among some people that the Republican Party is harsh on some things." And then he also said that the opposition to same-sex marriage is atmospherically and tonally, he said, it's part of the landscape of so-called harshness. In other words, he's trying to get the Republican Party to be a kinder, gentler, bigger tent party by coming out publicly and embracing gay marriage and getting rid of DOMA and not trying to pass a federal marriage amendment, and he's actually using the super PAC. They're going to attack. Chuck, we've said this for a long time to our friends.
Right.
We said it on this program. Guess where their first target is, where they think they can make the best impact and have the most policy impact with this new super PAC? They are going to be targeting congressional races.
Of course.
They're not targeting presidential, although Paul Singer is putting in lots of money into the presidential race and specifically into Congressman Paul Ryan's coffers. But they're going to target congressional races because he said there are more than a few Republicans, quote, who could be on the verge of support or are, quote, harboring and hiding their views.
That's right. So basically what they're doing is adopting Karl Rove, big tentism. And remember what Karl Rove brought us. He brought us George W. Bush, who basically betrayed all conservative principles during his tenure. Don't kid yourself if you think we got good Supreme Court justices out of that. First of all, you're not going to get anything like that out of Romney. And second of all, John Roberts didn't turn out to be so hot. In any case, the number of questions I have are go well beyond the amount of time that we have for today. But the fact is, I have to ask, what other issues are the Singer and
Dan Senior? Well, it's interesting because in talking about these issues that the Republican Party is harsh about,
they need to be
smoothed out and made kinder and gentler. Gay marriage was only one of the
right
topics. Some of the other ones included immigration and abortion.
Yeah, immigration, I seem to recall abortion. There are others, certain kinds of fiscal policy having to do with, I'm sure, welfare issues. Let's face it, Barry, this is a worldview battle.
Absolutely, it's a worldview battle.
And in fact, what's happening is that Christians are being suckered into supporting a team whose players, nobody knows who they are. And the fact is that Senior and Singer are not going to be as upfront as Karl Rove was with George W. Bush. The fact is they're going to be behind the scenes whispering into Romney's ear, whispering into Ryan's ear, whispering into these guys' ear and telling them, don't go conservative. Don't go conservative. Don't go conservative. Well, you don't have to yet. You don't have to do it until about 18 months before the election. Then, when it's time to get reelected, suddenly they make right-hand turns all over the place and come back into the fold just long enough to make sure there's no primary challenges, and then voila, we're back to the races. Barry, this happens over and over and over and over and over again.
Well, what's the old chestnut that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing you've always done in the same way you've always done it and expecting a different result. I'm sadly, ladies and gentlemen, and biblically unfaithfully, many of our friends in the social conservative world have been doing the same thing they've always done in the same way they always do it, and they always expect another result.
Go.
You know, Chuck, as I've said before, politics is like a giant puzzle. It's when you start getting some of the pieces that start forming the picture together that you start figuring out how the rest of the pieces fit. This, what we talked about here there 16 months ago is now being fleshed out because now we're seeing more of the picture. So now we're seeing where all the pieces mainly fit. Also including pieces we've talked about other issues. I think it's interesting, and although I think it might be an accidental on the reporter's part at Politico, I think they're like blind pig. They hit on something again. And they said in this article, it says Paul Singer, who we're talking about, has long been a key player in GOP money circles, which we know, espousing a non-traditional brand of conservatism. Okay, Chuck, ding, 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 yeah. Ding. Non-traditional brand of conservatism is basically the same thing what we talked about. I have the right to define what conservatism means because I've got the money.
Exactly.
And that's what he's trying to do.
And that's why the made mention of the postmodern way of thinking about these words.
That's exactly right. So basically what he's done is he's pulled a number of billionaires together, mainly who give to the Republican Party on various issues, and he's pulling them all together in this alliance, and he's attracting the likes of John Boehner and big name politicians. And let's not kid ourselves, you're going to start finding, if you start looking carefully at some of their PAC reports and some of their contribution reports for our federal office holders, you're going to start seeing names like Dan Loeb and Paul Singer and Todd Ricketts, who's openly advocates for homosexuality, Cliff Asness, Charles Schwab, Harlan Crow. These are all people that Singer's pulled into his group, who are all going to put their money together to push for, what did we say? Immigration reform, gay rights, and support for the state of Israel. And they consider that defense policy. Who's gone to these things? Well, okay, in the 2012 Republican National Convention, which we talked about in that clip, there was an economics panel put together that was featured at least one congressman. Remember who that congressman was? Paul Ryan,
yeah.
And guess who else? And then there was another dinner during that time that Singer put together with Dan Loeb at the Hyatt, and guess who their keynote was? New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Oh, my goodness. Now you start to see those puzzle pieces are starting to come together. Now they're out there funding. They've spent over $500,000 on at least three, if not four, U.S. Senate races. All around the country, they're spreading their money out. Now, their PAC, Dan Sr., who we talked about who worked for Paul Singer and then who went to become a quote-unquote advisor for Mitt Romney, is now back around donating money to their PAC. And also people like, well, Vince McMahon, who's the head of the World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE, you know, the acted out wrestling,
yeah,
on television.
It's WWE because it's World Wrestling Entertainment.
Because his wife has run for the United States Senate from Connecticut at least a couple of times.
Twice.
But they're big donors to this PAC, and probably she's going to end up being a recipient of it. You've got all kinds of names that are out there, but the other thing you've got is the connections. Singer has now worked, it says since the 2012 elections, which he lost, by the way, because Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan didn't make it, Singer has stepped up his advocacy for an overhauled GOP agenda. In other words, get rid of the social conservatives and do what we want to do. He's donated to immigration reform groups, and he and Dan Loeb, who's another billionaire, works closely with him, organized an event with the Human Rights Campaign, which is the national pro-gay rights lobby, because what they were doing is they wanted to educate not just our congressmen, but world leaders, because they went to Davos, to the International Economic Forum, on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered and questioning issues. Folks, this is a full court press of propaganda in order to get their way in politics. There's only one thing that can stop them. Voters.
And there's an issue here that I just real quick. Do you realize that if Mitt Romney had won, these people would all be in top advisory positions?
Exactly. And then their handpicks would be in the executive offices in the cabinet. Folks, it doesn't really take a crystal ball to know what the picture looks like if you just take the time to think about how the pieces fit together. That's what we do here. That's why we hope you're listening to what we do here on this program. We'll keep doing it as long as we've got an outlet to do it on. Folks, we cannot just accept that, oh, because so-and-so has a certain letter behind their name, they must be the good guy.
Yeah. Don't get caught in that trap.
Whether it's at the presidential level, the national level, or the state or local levels.
If you want to get some insight on how this works, join us for our Institute on the Constitution class. Barry and I are going to be teaching coming up starting March the 4th. That's a Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Cathedral of Praise in Pataskala, Ohio. That's directly behind where the old Summit Town Inn restaurant was there on Broad Street at Broad and Summit. We're right behind that. Cathedral of Praise, 7 p.m., March 4th. You can sign up at principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.